It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay, then here we go. Okay. So, something recently caused me to rethink this whole golden rule business.
Oh, okay.
Not completely, but I feel like the golden rule as we lay it out is dangerously simplistic.
I mean, I've heard that argument, sure.
And it caused me to look up and see lots of different sort of interpretations of the golden rule and people who don't like the golden rule because of a particular way they interpret it.
Sure.
And it's basically, well, okay. The prime example that I ran into that is a really good example of this is lots of men like to talk very sexually about women they don't know / have just met, especially online.
Okay.
And lots of women don't like this.
Sure.
Because they consider that a private thing, and also because it feels very sort of objectifying. Like, that you're just about me as a sex object.
Sure.
But I genuinely think, and this is, again, sort of as somebody who in the past was like this, and a common response from guys, what are you doing? It's a compliment. here's the deal, though. In a lot of these cases, those guys are, from a certain interpretation, treating these women as they would want to be treated. Because one of the things in this society, besides that we constantly sexualize women, is that we generally don't sexualize men. And I have constantly found this a thing in that obviously, you don't just want to treat someone like a sex object. But as a person who has never been treated that way, whether by a stranger or just like by a partner or anything, the idea of somebody like just telling me, God, you're so fucking hot, like you're like, has a very strong appeal. I mean, in my case, I'd assume they were kidding me or something like that. But like, that idea, I would love for somebody to, or the same version of a guy who is really looking for a woman just anywhere, and so he just hits on any woman he sees. In reality, if a woman hit on him, he would like that. And so he thinks, you know, he's doing. And so it becomes a thing, because it's not always treat someone how you want to be treated in an active sense. Because the other version is, how would you want to be treated? Would you want to be respected as an individual? Then you should do that for them. And in that case, obviously, they're not following the golden rule.
Right.
But that's the thing. How I want to be treated can be defined and abstracted or not abstracted in so many ways that it's... And I think every situation is somewhat unique to that. That it can be difficult to, if you claim that's just your guiding principle right there. Because you clearly have to define it certain ways.
Well... But another way to conceptualize it, though, is to say that the golden rule is really asking you to put yourself in that person's position.
Yes, and that's one of the interpretations I read that was very pro-golden rule was focusing on empathy.
Right.
And really, empathy is the most important thing.
And to put yourself in their position, like, really put yourself.
Yes.
You can't say, well, if I were that person, no.
Yes, no.
If you really think about what it would mean to be that person.
If you were in that situation with their feelings and their past, experiences and all that kind of thing.
Exactly. That's right.
What is this looking like from their perspective?
From their perspective, exactly right.
But I mean, that is a very specific interpretation of the concept.
Agreed.
And so, yeah, I'm reevaluating. Yeah, see, I had you scared there. You thought I was abandoning the government. No,
I didn't think that.
The audience did. Come on, we're building tension here.
Okay.
I was just going to give up on that one.
Building tension.
But yeah, I think it is very, very much about empathy. And I think emphasizing that rather than necessarily the sentence, do as others.
There's also the problem of interpretation. I mean, I think the oldest version is Buddha's version.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if the English interpretations of it adequately capture even what he meant or whatever. So I don't know. That's another thing. That's a whole other aspect of it.
Well, yeah, and the translation of the original. Sorry, you meant translation.
Did I not say that?
You said interpretation.
I meant
translation. That's what we were talking about.
I meant translation.
Yeah, right. And that's a good point as well. But, I mean, I wasn't claiming that whatever, you know, ancient text is what I go by. When we were talking before, because you and I talked about how that's sort of our life philosophy is the golden rule. I meant it as do unto others as you would unto you.
Oh, okay.
And now I'm like, that's not a good descriptor of what I mean.
I took from the context, though, because we elaborated on that quite a bit.
Yeah.
We were using golden rule as a very shorthand way of expressing what we were describing explicitly as empathy, I thought.
But, and I think that's accurate. I think in conversations, that's an important distinction.
No, agreed. Yeah, agreed.
Because, I mean, I haven't ever seen somebody say, I was following the golden rule when they do something horrible. But I have seen reactions that I'm like, that's basically what they're saying.
It's
issues that I've been dealing with lately involving my own sexual and gender issues. And some of it because of how I view gender in this society and how that impacts me has made me think in these terms that, like, there's a lot of terrible, especially when it comes to sort of creepy men. A lot of what they're doing is how they want to be treated, in that they literally would love it if someone would approach them in the same way.
Yeah, right.
Because they, and not just because they don't get it, but also because, thanks to the way society works, they have been bereft of that sort of attention in any capacity. And so they really crave that sort of attention, so they assume everyone craves that sort of attention.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've run into the problem. We've talked about how the culture I came from was very different from the culture I entered.
Yeah.
And so treating people the way I wanted to be treated in that context was often disastrous.
Yes.
For example, I would be what the person I was communicating with, brutally honest from their perspective,
when
I thought I was being...
And that's a huge one.
Yeah.
The role of tact
in
interactions is incredibly variable.
Yeah, right.
And some people hate tact. Like, hey, don't beat around the bush or whatever. Just say what
you
mean.
They think it's deceptive or dishonest.
Well, and in your
case, even disrespectful.
You often try and take it at its word, and so if someone's being circumspect, it can be hard to understand.
That's right. Very hard to understand.
Whereas other people are like, no, I need that buffer. I'm not comfortable. It's not always I'm not comfortable with honesty in general, but it's like, we ain't got that kind of relationship.
Yeah, right.
So don't... The person on the street doesn't get to tell me that shit.
But there are also rules. I mean, when you enter a cult, some cultures, the style of communication is defined in such a way that euphemisms are taken very seriously.
Yeah.
So if you go into that situation and you don't understand the euphemisms, it's not that they're being... it's not that they're trying to mess you up or something.
Yeah.
That's just how the cultural reality is. You know what I'm trying to say?
Absolutely.
And in our culture, if you're dealing with someone who comes from an oppressed group, a lot of times euphemisms develop as a defense mechanism or a way to protect them in certain situations. So if you go in, like I often have, with all the privilege I've got carrying around, and this person's being euphemistic, as with defense mechanisms that they've learned from their oppressed experience, And I can't judge them too harshly for that. Like, oh, you're messing with me, or you're playing games.
No, exactly.
You've heard that before, right? Well, I don't like people who play games. It's like, well, the person might not really be playing games.
You can't assume motive.
That's right. Exactly right. That's what I'm trying to say.
It does remind me, and it's weird how often these guys come up, but David Mitchell and Rob Webb, the Mitchell and Webb sketch comedy stuff, those guys had one. So a lot of British humor, especially 60s, 70s, 80s, partially, I mean, it was here too as well, but because of the sort of overly etiquette-based British culture of the time, so much of it was based on very heavy body innuendo.
Yeah, right.
And, like, that was the joke.
Yeah, yeah.
And they did this great sketch where it was a... It was supposed to be like a 70s like joke innuendo. And there's this one guy who was trying. It was done as though it was a real place. And this new doctor was in there. And he just kept explicitly saying sexual things. Oh. And they were all just... And he got called into an office. He's like, no, you have to understand the difference between innuendo and specific. And it was just silly. But I'm like, that's a thing,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, it is a thing.
There's a lot of stuff. It's like, we can talk about this as long as we don't say it this way.
Yeah.
In a lot of cultures, frequently unspoken.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, believe me, I know that.
And to a certain point, it makes it look ridiculous. It's like, when you're obviously talking about that particular, you know, set of genitalia, it's silly that somehow it's horrible if you actually refer to that specific set of genitalia in your joke or whatever.
Seems true anyway.
I mean, there you could say that it's not as funny if it's not a play on words. But the fact that, like, this heavy innuendo is acceptable, but if we're explicit about it, suddenly we're like, is kind of silly in a way.
Well, except that there's a social, like, and a cultural agreement that if you say it this way, you signal to everybody that you mean no harm. You're just being funny. If you say it this way, it's more ambiguous as to whether or not you're being harm, or maybe it's signaling you do mean harm.
Well, and this also ties into the, we don't want to teach little kids the proper words for things, which is funny because I'm on the camp of, like, no, you teach them the real words. But when you hang out with kids who have been taught that, there is something weird about listening to them say, like, penis and vagina and stuff. It's like,
yeah.
Really?
You know what this makes me think of? This makes me think of the song Baby, It's Cold Outside.
Oh, my goodness.
Because here's the thing about that. You know that I object to this song,
yes,
personally.
As do I.
I don't. If a radio station says, well, we're going to play it because it's this classic old song, I'm not going to, like, boycott that radio station or anything. Because here's the thing. I have known and still know women who love this song.
Oh, yeah.
And they love it because this is the way they want their romances to be.
Mm-hmm.
They want
mm-hmm.
to be pursued.
Yes.
They want... they don't want... no to mean yes or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they do want
the hard to get angle.
Yeah, because they feel like there's a way they push the guy away that they think implies heavily that they don't really want that.
And there's a definite it follows a definite fantasy that some people have.
That's right. That's right.
And there's nothing wrong with that fantasy.
No, there isn't.
Yes.
No, that's right. I agree with that. So I can't. So if. And, but the other side of that is, there are some men who want to date those women.
Yes.
So they hear the song that way, and, you know, that should be fine in that context, too. It's only problematic because, obviously, you have people who...
Sometimes those men and those women aren't the ones
exactly,
that meet
up. Exactly. That's
exactly
right.
Absolutely.
And, for example, I've never, I mean, no offense to anybody, but I've never been interested in a woman like that. I can't, as you could probably imagine, I can't really deal with that. I take people at their word, and she's going to think that...
I think that's why you and I never dated. I mean, I was sort of playing just a little game to make it romantic, and you were like, okay, clearly you're not interested.
Okay, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. So I've run into that problem myself.
You were supposed to chase me, William.
So, but what I'm saying is that this makes the conversation complicated. It's really not as simple as this is a date rape song, period, and you shouldn't play it. It's It's complicated. Well,
and there is a arguably legit point out there that it was a different interpretation of a lot of the specific language in it at the time it was done, and that it doesn't necessarily mean the same thing. It is also reflective of a time where that was considered more okay as well, so it's problematic as well.
Right.
But, I mean, literally the meaning of the song at the time is not necessarily the meaning we derive from it now. As somebody who once really enjoyed that song and now very much does not, like, I just hear it and it's cringy to me and I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm really sick of us all talking about it. Like,
you're right, brought it up. This is great.
If you don't like the song, avoid listening to the song.
Yeah, right.
And be perfectly open about the fact
that
you don't like the song and it's creepy as fuck. If you do like the song, buy a copy. I'm sure it's out there. Listen to it when it's up. You can tell people, you know what, I like this song. That's fine. Let's all move on. If a radio station wants to say, you know what, we're not cool with this, we're going to stop, I'm fine with that.
Right.
I think it's ridiculous to insist a radio station do that. Meanwhile, if a radio station is like, you know what, this is ruining Christmas or whatever, we're going to play it, I'm fine if you play it, but you sound like a douche. Like, just play it. You don't have to.
Okay, so we're on the same page when it comes to all. We're on the same page.
And we both don't like the song.
No, right. But of course, I feel that way about lots of things.
And again, we're both two white guys.
That's true.
We have more comfort. Like, we don't necessarily get chills when we hear that song. Other people might.
That's true. But there's also a larger issue of, do we really need to it seems like we should be able to say, well, I don't like that, so I'll just avoid it.
Yeah.
And if someone else likes it, that's their business. But it seems like lately, or maybe this has been going on for a long time, I don't know, we feel like we have to decide, all of us, once and for all, whether this is good or bad.
Well, basically, like what Baby It's Cold Outside is doing to society in 2019. And you know what the answer is? Nothing. Baby, it's other than how this fight is influencing us all.
Yeah.
That song, its presence or its absence is not making people think that kind of shit is okay, because it's a song from the goddamn 50s. There's a lot of weird shit from back then.
Yeah, right.
Its absence is also not destroying masculine image or romance. Right. Like, none of that is happening, guys. This song doesn't have this kind of power.
No.
I find it personally distasteful in this day and age because of what it makes me. Same thing with all the scandals out there. If you like listening to Bill Cosby's comedy right now, not only am I fine with that, I am envious of you.
Because you can't.
I loved that stuff.
Yeah.
I grew up on it. It is some of the and all other horrible, shitty, fuck you, Bill Cosby things aside, dude was a really clever and good comedian. Like, that, his horrible behavior and his comedic brilliance both still exist, and neither of them takes away the other one.
That's right.
And,
well, do you think, but part of it's this. Okay, so one of the things I don't like about Baby It's Cold Outside, there's probably a lot of things, but I have to admit that one of the things that's probably led to me feeling that way about it, even being able to hear it the way I hear it, is I'm pretty sure I know women who are going to hear that song and think of something that happened to them.
Yep.
Now, and I think that's a fair response. Absolutely. For me to have. Now, what's happened is someone could hear me say that and say, yes, so doesn't that mean the people who like the song are being insensitive to all those women who've experienced these things? To which I would say, I don't know. I mean, that's not my business to decide or even to figure that out.
And it gets really tricky. So any song that implies a drug reference, then we can't. Or any song that's a breakup song.
Well, sure, exactly.
Like, people have traumatic experiences. And in fact, songs reminding you of painful or traumatic experiences is a pretty common phenomenon.
Yeah, that people actually want to listen to sometimes.
I think it's shitty to try and force those songs on people.
Sure. Yeah, right.
But
this is a theme that I keep hearing in when someone does a certain thing, it's condemned, and the reasoning seems to be because the person who did it was insensitive to other people who
Well, and it's that line of the freedom to do things versus you're still kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like, if you're doing things that are insensitive to others, I think you're a dick. I don't necessarily think you should then not be able to do those things.
Yeah, right.
I totally think it's fine for other people to be like, you know what? You're a dick. I'm not going to hang out with you.
That's right.
I'm not going to listen to your TV show.
That's right. That's right.
Or whatever else.
Sure, exactly.
But they don't get to say, you're being a dick. You should go away. Like, they're just saying, you're being a dick. I'm not going to have anything to do with you. There are a lot of... Bill Maher still has a TV show. Bill Maher is a dick. And I never want to hear anything on his TV show. And I don't watch his TV show, and it's awful. I would never suggest he has to lose his TV show.
Yeah, right, right.
If we're not dealing with issues of, like, hate speech and stuff that, like, the very nature of it is threatening to individuals, if it's just, oh, that makes me unhappy, or that's really gross, or that what, like, as long as you have the power to get away from it,
yeah,
it's there. You're still a dick, and there's still consequences of that. It's everybody, all the people in all the scandals lately that are about, we need to do process, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Absolutely. Which is why, like, none of these guys are in jail.
Right.
Yet.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed. But we can all say, you know what? When 16 women all say, or let's... When like 9 or 10 different women have come out and say, oh yeah, Ryan Adams pulled that shit to me where he basically preyed on me sexually under the guise of getting me into the music biz, I can say, you know what? Fuck Ryan Adams.
Yeah, right.
I'm not saying send him to jail. I'm saying I don't want anything to... If he's headlining at your show, I'm not going to that show.
Yeah, right,
if he's having a performance on TV, I'm not watching that thing. I'm certainly not buying any of his shit, and I'm certainly open with the fact that I say, fuck Ryan Adams, and I'm totally entitled to do that. And he's entitled to be a free man until such time as evidence proves otherwise, but we're all entitled to say, fuck you, we're not dealing with you anymore.
That's right.
And that's what all of this is. Baby, It's Cold Outside, I think, is a creepy song now.
I
didn't
too.
Always think that way. It's not... It's not... It's a really old, like, if people want to listen to it, whatever, that's fine. I don't want to listen to it. If you try and make me listen to it, I'm not going to be happy about that. But if they don't want to, that's fine. And if a radio station doesn't want to play it, that's fine. And shut up, William Shatner.
One of the things that's funny about this, about all of this, is that some of the most recent recordings of it actually make like it worse.
Well, and they like to switch the genders.
Well, I've never heard that, but...
Oh, yeah, no, there was a Lady Gaga, Joseph Gordon-Levitt one that switched it.
That's interesting.
For the Muppet, Lady Gaga's Muppet Christmas, which is an absolutely bizarre thing that I don't know if I can recommend because it's just weird as fuck.
But some of them make it worse. Like at the end, the two people will talk to each other like, wow, you're really persistent. Yeah, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, wait, you just made it even creepier than it was before.
What rhymes with consent?
And these are newer versions of it. Like, they're so oblivious.
And this is the thing that
they make
love.
It worse.
Do you know how much shit... And okay, setting aside hip-hop, let's just start right there.
Okay.
Hip-hop is not part of this discussion.
Okay.
Do you know how much music is out there from the 70s, 80s, 90s that has so much worse shit in it?
Yeah, sure.
A fuck ton of George Michael stuff, if you listen to those lyrics.
Oh, I didn't know
that.
Oh,
my God. Like half the Faith album is date rapey as hell.
Huh.
Like, and there's just so much stuff. Like, most 80s pop that's anything romantic or whatever... There are constant songs about I cheated on you and you're terrible for not giving me back. I mean, that was sort of a genre for a long time.
Stalker songs.
Yeah, stalker
songs. That's a whole,
like,
that's a whole
oh
genre.
God.
I'll be watching you.
Yes. Like,
lots
there's
of
a
those.
Lot of songs like this. And if you don't like them, then you don't like them. And that totally makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me.
But here's the thing. And I'm putting this out there because I'm often wrong. If somebody wants to show me something that shows that, you know what, K. continuing to play Baby It's Cold Outside actually does have, like, an impact on things. And I'm like, because I have lines on this. Like I said, hate speech is out. If there's shit that makes you unhappy or that you find creepy or that you find offensive, find a way to work with that and avoid that and stuff. If there's shit that makes you feel genuinely threatened and that you think is literally propagating something that is a threat to you, then there's a problem with it existing, whether or not you choose to listen to it or not. That shit shouldn't be out there. And if somebody wants to give me an argument that Baby It's Cold Outside does that, I'm here to listen. Not here. You guys can't talk back, but like, and this is the thing. At this point, I don't perceive that, but I'm not about to say, you know what? You guys are wrong to think that it should just not exist anywhere, because maybe you got a compelling argument, but I don't see one at present. I think it sucks, though. I'm tired of it. Let's do other. But, I mean, yeah. A lot of stuff pisses me off that I'm like, it pisses me off. It doesn't mean everybody else has to stop.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
Like, if everything that pissed me off stopped, that would be a beautiful day. But, we'd be missing a lot of things. Including shit that, like, pisses me off and then at other times doesn't. And vice versa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, if I got to make how the world how it was now, Baby It's Cold Outside might be gone. But back in the day, Baby It's Cold Outside would be a very common Christmas carol because I really enjoyed it back in the time. I remember a time on the Drew Carey show where they did it. It was a sweet romantic moment because there was this little subplot where he was dating the woman who was the mom in the Partridge Family. And it was a big thing because she was much older, and so it was a controversial thing or whatever. But one of the things is they're outside looking at snow or whatever, and they were getting cold, and he starts just sort of jokingly singing it, and she starts singing it back, and then at a certain point they kissed, and I thought it was super sweet and romantic. So at the time, I really liked that song. Now, not so much. Well, also, now not so much do I like the Drew Carey show. But
it's in Elf. You know, every year if you watch Elf for Christmas, they sing it. I don't know. I it just seemed like a good example of the kind of thing we were talking
absolutely,
about.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. The only podcast in the world dedicated to starting a mixed martial arts tournament that will once and for all decide the one true religion. I know usually they're more connected to what we were just talking about, but I had that one going for a while. So
that reminds me of something.
That's scary that it does. But how long is it? Oh, sorry. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and it's this episode. 415.
All right. And it's half over already. For those of you just joining us, we mostly talk about old creepy Christmas carols. No, we have a hat. It's magical, and then it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, people that really need to be stepping up right now. The hat is starting to get low on things. Help us out. People, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards that manifest physically in the hat. With the information written on them, it manifests physically within the hat itself. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for, I guess, the remaining half hour. Normally an hour. And that's the whole show, except the parts that aren't, which, as you can see, is most of it. Just the other day, I was writing something to all of work, and I was trying to find a good word for it, and I ended up with congeal. And then Coffee emailed me. She's like, you should have said transmogrify. And I was like, oh my God, I should have said transmogrify.
You made me think of a book that I was, that I discovered today about a guy wrote this book sort of describing a secular faith, so to speak.
Okay.
The idea being that, that, you know, even if we're coming into an age where people seem to be agnostic or atheist or whatever, there can still be a spirituality of a sense, a sense of meaning.
Humanism, basically.
I guess, but he was trying to form, you know, what this would would look like. And I was going to tell you about it in case you were interested in reading it. There's also a political element where he insists that democratic socialism is the only political system that makes sense in this worldview or whatever. I mean, I'm sure there are a lot of things that wouldn't resonate with me in this, but maybe it would you.
As a democratic socialist, I...
Well, maybe I'll send you a link.
I'm offended by the idea that that's the only thing that would ever work. That's the thing. I get real tired of a lot of the isms now.
No, I know what you're saying.
But I mean, absolutely send it to me and I'll check it out.
Yeah,
but.
I'll send you a link to it. It seemed very interesting. But anyway, you were going to ask
me. How long has it been since we actually...
It's been 2 weeks.
Has it been 2 weeks? I'm totally... Everything now is just this blur of cold, fucked up winter.
And where are you going? You're packing tonight for
what? Tomorrow's GamaCon.
Oh, yeah.
And we're staying up there in Cedar Rapids. And in fact... I thought maybe he was dead or something, but Azure Talon recently finally commented again on things, so I'm pretty sure I'll see him there.
Oh, okay.
I know a bunch of the Quad Cities gamers who used to hang out with me on Happy Jacks will be there. I'm playing in at least one of their games that they're running. So.
What are you playing?
Oh, tons and tons and tons of stuff. Oh. I'm playing... Tomorrow I'm playing in an Amber Diceless game run by Dave Vid, which I'm very excited about. Because I was very into the Amber game when we started, which was like in high school, and it always went horribly, and I could never figure out a way to make it work.
Mm.
And David Vitt is probably the best GM in the world I know. So I'm like, if anybody can make it cool, it'll be him. Yeah. And so I'll finally be able to see. I'm also playing in a Call of Cthulhu game that same day. Later, what is... I'm playing Lady Blackbird with... Well, so Trish is going... And Trish's sister is going.
Oh.
And so we're all doing stuff. So I'm playing Lady Blackbird run by Tasha Robinson, who's used to be a journalist for AV Club and for Dissolve for a while and stuff like that, and is a good friend of some friends of my gaming group.
Mm.
And she used to live around here, so she comes back from GamerCon.
Mm.
And she runs really good games. I'm excited about that. I don't even remember. Oh, I'm playing a Dread game. That's about kaiju being found in the Coralville water reservoir. With Trish, we're going to play that, so we're kind of excited about that. Okay. I know on the last day there's some sort of social party-type game called Gruel Truck that's basically adventurers from, like, fantasy tropes into, like, D&D characters try and run a food truck business.
Mm.
Apparently we all get paper hats. Like, that's a part of it.
Nice, so nice.
Kind of excited about that. But, yeah, a few different things. It's going to be actually really busy, I think, so I'm both excited and nervous about that because that's not usually how I do GamaCon. I, like, sign up for, like, two games, one on Saturday, one on Sunday, and I show up just for that, and then I go home.
Mm.
This will be, like, a whole thing.
Well, we've never been, and we would be going, but there's just all kinds of things going on with my wife right now that I don't need to get into, but it makes it difficult to get away and do stuff like that.
Third arm. He's growing a third arm.
But so the last couple weeks, you know, there was Valentine's Day and there was my birthday.
Yes. But happy birthday, by the way. So you're 50 now?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Senior citizen.
You don't look 50. I'll give you that.
Well.
You don't look 50.
I don't know what... I look 60?
No, you look 102. But, no, you look younger than 50.
Oh, well, I guess that's good.
Trish also looks way younger than her age.
So, for Valentine's Day, we decided... We're such homebodies now. It's like the best thing we can do almost always is stay home.
Yep.
So we ordered out, which we never do, but this was great. We did that. And for Valentine's Day, we binge-watched the new Netflix reboot of She-Ra.
Oh.
And she loved it. I mean, just loved it.
I have been curious about this.
I would.
Because I liked the original She-Ra, but I also really like the original He-Man. And when I stop and think about them, they were the same show. I mean,
well,
they were in different wind directions, but like all the beats, all the lessons, all like it was the same stuff.
Well, this is pretty much a new thing.
I would assume. It would be weird if they were just recreating the 80s experience.
I would place it between, like, almost smack dab in the middle, between the most woke Disney princess cartoon on one side and Steven Universe on the other. It's almost exactly in the middle.
That's a weird thing to say.
Do you know the comic Lumberjanes?
I do not.
Okay, well, the
I also still haven't watched any Steven Universe.
Well, I've only seen the little bits that Jazz has been able to send me, but I think I get the gist of how it approaches storytelling, which I love.
Name's Steven, he's a universe.
It's really good stuff. This isn't quite. It doesn't quite get there, but it's really good. I mean, my wife loved it. I liked it. We really enjoyed binge watching it more than we thought we would. So, I mean, I guess I recommend it for anybody. I thought it was pretty good. Now, the whole He-Man She-Ra thing in the '80s was a little bit after our time. You know, we were
No, and it was dead on for me.
We were teenagers when it was coming out.
With that shit.
You said that once we were talking.
Big into He-Man.
You might like it. I mean, I don't know if you will or not.
Like, I spent a long time thinking a page boy cut was a good look. I didn't have one, but I kind of like wanted one.
Also, on Dave Avid's recommendation, we've been watching The Americans.
Oh yeah.
And we're getting the discs from Netflix, and we'll watch one season of Americans.
It's not streaming.
No. We'll watch a season of Americans, and we'll watch The Addams Family, and then we'll watch Americans.
Little palate cleansers.
I am enjoying watching Addams Family. I can't help myself. But Americans is actually pretty good. Have you seen it?
No, I've heard it's amazing. I'm worried it's just a little heavy for me.
I don't know. It's hard to say. When I was first watching it, I know just enough about Cold War era spycraft and stuff to have really been impressed with how authentic it was. Now, I'm sure there were a lot, people who are smarter than me are saying, no, it wasn't at all. But I know a little bit about these things, and I was really impressed. And I didn't think they would be able to maintain it. I thought, this is going to go Alias. They're going to do some really crazy stuff in the second or third season.
It's going to be ghosts and shit.
Exactly. But now they've kept it up. And the acting is very good. It feels like the writing is pretty good. So, I appreciate Dave Avid suggesting it, and we're really enjoying it, so we're going to keep watching it. I mean, it's like seven seasons or something.
Yeah, and they're big seasons, too. They're not like five or six episodes.
No.
Are they 22 or are they like 13, maybe?
It's closer to 13, yeah. But hour long.
Like, I'm struggling with Orphan Black. I am literally one episode away from the end of season three, and then I've decided I'm taking a break. One thing is it's just dark, like lots of bad things happen to people, but also I get tired of the whose side is everyone on. Oh, there's another player. Like, literally I watched an episode and it ended with a big twist that so and so was actually working with so and so and had actually switched sides and we just didn't know, and there was a big plot. And it wasn't until like a half hour later after I'd watched it, I was in the shower, I was like, oh, I guess that was a new thing we didn't know that was like a twist or whatever. I just don't care anymore. I'm like, yes, of course, you're on a different side. Of course, you betrayed them.
I think the one thing that might be difficult about the Americans is you really get a feeling, like I said, and whether this is actually earned or not, you really get a feeling of authenticity. And a lot of historical things are brought up. I mean, they want you, the showrunners definitely want you to feel like you are seeing into, actual illegals who were Russians and were working in the United States. And there are actual historical things that happen, and they have to deal with these actual historical things. And maybe that level of realism, and sometimes it gets very dark also, that might be upsetting to some people.
I may just not be that into spies. Like, I'm into moral ambiguity, and I'm into active espionage, like we got a heist on a building kind of thing or whatever. But the whole double, triple agent stuff never appeals to me.
But the appeal of this is the constant tension between, it'll come up, for example, like these have these great conversations, like the husband, will ask the wife, don't you like this? Because the fact of the matter is, they live better in America as these spies as they would be living back home.
Yeah.
And she's like, it's different. And there's things that I I benefit from, yes. but it's not better. I mean, these are interesting, complex conversations.
Yeah. Well, and that idea of like, trying to live a life while you're living a life that's really your life, but it's also a lie while you're doing another job secretly.
But then right after that conversation, he just bought this brand new car, which it's cool because it's in the 80s. So it's when the Z28 was first introduced. So that's what he's driving. So if you know anything about the 80s, you're like, wow, they made reference to this really cool car. And so he has this conversation with her. He parks the car and he's looking at it admiringly like, yeah, being in America is pretty awesome. Then he leaves. Something happens where he learns that the Americans did some terrible thing to some Soviets. And then later on, he's returning to that car. And the way he looks at it is completely different. It's like, oh, that is great. No words, right?
He didn't have to.
In both times, he didn't say a thing. He was just looking at it admiringly. Yeah. And then these things happen, and you forgot all about the car. And then he steps up to it and looks at it in a completely different way. And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff is all through this show. And it's very good.
I have no question that it's really good. I just don't know.
So we've really been enjoying that. And we've been watching Umbrella Academy, but we haven't finished it.
We may have to check out Umbrella Academy. I've been hearing a lot of sort of different things, but it sounds like it's kind of cool.
It's well made. I like
Ellen Page. I want to follow.
I don't know if it's really doing it for me, but it's very well made.
Not getting the DC streaming service.
I don't think I am either.
Mostly because I'm not getting it for one thing. But I did see the one thing. That is why you should get the DC streaming service.
What's that?
I saw the extended trailer for Doom Patrol.
Yeah, Doom Patrol.
And apparently, for people who've actually seen it, it is that good.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Oh, God, it looks good.
It does, yeah.
Like,
I agree.
I'm not buying a service for that. And most of the other things they want, I'm not interested in.
Well, when they first announced it, I was like, oh, how are we not going to get this? Because when they first announced it, it sounded like if you pay for this service, you can watch all the Linda Carter Wonder Womans you want.
Yeah, and
you
all the Batmans.
All the Batmans.
Is that not how it is?
No, it's, they're like, for one thing, they're rolling some things out sort of gradually.
Okay.
And another thing I've heard is that whatever they do have will be for a limited time, and then they'll have something else.
So it's like the fucking Disney Vault.
Or something.
Yeah, okay.
And it's like, wait a minute, no. I mean, the price tag on this for monthly or yearly, whatever.
A library.
It's pretty high.
Yeah.
You know, when I first heard, when
yeah, it's one of the higher ones.
It seems like it. I mean, when they were first talking about it and all the stuff that I thought it was going to have, and then they said how much it was going to be, I thought, well, that seems about right with all that stuff.
Yeah.
But then it's not really all that stuff. Plus,
you know who's staying cheap? It's Hulu. I'm genuinely thinking about Hulu.
When they introduce a show, they don't release the whole thing at once.
Oh, yeah. Just, well, and that, different streaming services do that. Netflix has always been like a, here's all your stuff. But other streaming services do that. They want to keep that feel of, oh, one a week kind of deal.
Yeah,
actually, Netflix fucking with that now because, like, they'll have things where, I believe technically, like, both Sabrina and Disenchanted, those weren't season one. Those were the first part of season one in each of them. But I mean, and that becomes semantic, I suppose.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen the second one, which theoretically we have now, but we watched the first of Miracle Workers. Mm. The thing where Steve Buscemi is God and he's really disillusioned and so he's going to blow up Earth and it's up to an actress you probably haven't heard of.
We've talked about this?
And
I don't remember this at all.
Steve Buscemi's God, and he's just kind of depressed and not and stuff. So he's going to blow up the Earth. And a couple angels, one of whom is Daniel Radcliffe, decide they have to stop it. There's like 2 weeks before it's going to happen. They have to find a way to fix it. And it's a limited series. And you fucking know it's a limited series because it has goddamn Steve Buscemi and Daniel Radcliffe. And they're not exactly going to be hanging around for TV shows.
Probably not.
And it's got some potential. It's got some potential. It's a little silly in places. I'm very pleased. So I told you a long time ago I watched the movie Blockers. That's really called Cock Blockers, but they didn't do that.
Yeah.
The shitty one. And it has the three daughters or whatever. Two of the three daughters, those actresses did really good jobs, and I was very curious about them.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is playing the other angel with Daniel Radcliffe.
Oh, wow.
And I'm excited for her to be doing this. And there's also a guy, I don't remember the actor's name, and he's basically only known as the cab driver in the Deadpool movies, and then I know him from this really annoying Diet Coke commercial. But I really liked him in the Deadpool movies, and I like him here. And so I'm very there's just a lot of good people in this. And Angela Kinsey from The Office is in it, in sort of a small part and stuff. And it's pretty cool. So that has some potential, especially since it's a limited series. But the important thing, we got to hurry here on this.
Yeah, you haven't even talked about your 2 weeks.
This is my 2 weeks. Oh. But, we went and saw Alita Battle Angel.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well.
I absolutely recommend it quite highly for what it is.
For what it is.
Yes. So, full disclosure, I had no experience with the original material before this.
Okay.
I've looked up some of it since then. So that could bug people in some ways, because it's long. Technically, it's still going. The manga is still being created.
Oh.
And it's been since, like, the 80s.
So it might deviate.
Huge.
You don't know.
Did an anime that was also very popular that deviated some from the manga, but this. Yeah, so, like, that could be a thing. They could be like, that person's not supposed to be like
sure,
that or whatever.
Sure, sure.
That being said, I mean, no offense to the original stuff, but the story is generic trope-filled stuff you've seen 1,000 times.
Sure.
Every beat of this movie is not surprising.
Right.
In the slightest.
Yeah, that's Umbrella Academy's like that.
And it's
not
just
surprising.
You know every, and it's like, oh, somebody oh yeah, of course they were gonna betray them. Yeah. What, oh yeah,
yeah,
oh look, oh they're in love, what a shock. Like
yeah,
like all
right,
that kind of shit.
Yep,
and
yep,
oh that
right,
person, yeah. So that whatever. I mean, it's not bothersome, but it's like there's no reason, like that is not part of the reason to see the movie at all.
Sure.
It's pretty. It's really pretty, and I don't just mean it looks really cool. It is a very action-based movie, and the action is amazing because it's all fucking cyborgs, and they're all having fucking fights and stuff, and it's really well done, and it's really cool to watch. So it's a very cool, fun movie to go through, but it's shallow as hell. Except there's funny things. So this is a passion project of James Cameron. He wrote this.
That's right.
And he's been gonna write this since Dark Angel. And in fact, Dark Angel was partly inspired by this. But he was gonna write this script ever since back then. And then he got into all the crazy Avatar shit and was at the bottom of the ocean and all that bullshit. So he hasn't. But he finally got around to it. And Robert Rodriguez directed it. And one of the best things I think I can say about this is it doesn't look like a Robert Rodriguez-directed film.
I wouldn't know what that looks like.
Think Tarantino was slightly less to prove. he does very, like, violent stuff. And this movie is very violent, but remarkably bloodless for the most part. It's very PG-13 violent. But, like, you'll find it interesting because in the movie there's at least 3 or 4 roles that are tiny, like you'd call them cameos, that are being performed by very famous people.
Mm.
And the reason being, they aren't in development to do a sequel. They don't have a script for a sequel. They absolutely set it up so it could be a sequel.
Mm.
And if they do a sequel, those roles become very important, but they were like nothing in this. In fact, one of them, you literally just got introduced like, that's so-and-so, and then you never saw him again. And so I found that very interesting. And that being said, they also had some pretty big names as major. Christopher Waltz is in this, and Mr. Ali, I forget his first name. I can't pronounce his first name. It starts with an M. It's really long. He was in Green Book just recently. And he plays the black villain character in, like, everything lately.
Mm.
And he's incredible. And he's in this. Maybe a little wasted, but he's got a major part in this. Jennifer Connelly's in this. Surprising number of big names, but it's very cool sci-fi. The look of the town and everything is very cool. So I highly recommend it for just a real fun, good-looking sci-fi action movie. But, yeah, it's not. The plot doesn't matter. I feel like I've been watching more stuff, but I don't think I have been. We're very excited about Captain Marvel.
Yeah, we are too.
Like, we're setting up plans for like to go see it with the rest of the family and things like that.
Oh, that's nice.
And, oh, I'm getting excited about the new Hellboy.
Oh, okay.
And I think largely because I feel like the two previous Hellboys did it a disservice. The first Hellboy was pretty good until the last 20 minutes. The second Hellboy was pretty bad. I'm starting to learn Guillermo del Toro may not be a good director.
Mm.
He's a great visual effects guy. He may not be a great director. Pan's Labyrinth notwithstanding. But I like the Hellboy property, and I want it to be good. And this looks good. And I was worried, but they're sandwiching it perfectly. It's like 4 weeks after Captain Marvel and like 4 weeks before Endgame.
Because
I was like, it's going to die up against those. But they're putting it like as far away as they can. So, but yeah, there was another trailer for that, and that looked good.
Huh, I didn't see another trailer for that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't know. I mean, one of the trailers when we went to see Alita Battle Angel was that. I think it may have been the same one I watched.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
And yeah, and one for Captain Marvel. I'm very excited about Captain Marvel. Yeah, I think that's all I got at the moment. Yeah.
I've been thinking about this recently, how the most important thing to any story is craft. It actually doesn't matter if it's full of stock characters, stock plots, stock all that stuff. Whatever, if it's 90% stock, if the final 10% you craft the heck out of it, it could be great.
Yeah, and there's different aspects. You can tell the most generic story you've ever heard if you do it with characters that are unique and special and people really care about.
That's right.
Then it doesn't matter. And in fact, I love that kind of thing.
That's right. In fact, a stock can be an asset. Like with Star Wars, I mean, George Lucas that was all stock, everything.
Absolutely.
But because he crafted the heck out of the rest of it, it worked. And that was an asset, not a liability.
Say, Alita Battle Angel is not that.
Well, but
the characters are also really stock and generic.
Sure.
It's performed really well, but like.
Well, and the effects are crafted well, and the design is crafted well.
It's all about the spectacle. To me, the narrative to me is very
sure.
But
that's an example.
You don't even go for the story.
That's an example of what I'm talking about. They crafted the visuals and the design so well that you didn't mind the rest of the stuff.
And it's serviceable. It's not a shitty story. It's just a generic story.
Well, yeah. Sometimes, again, if you get the generic story right, it's archetypical and it can appeal to some deep things.
Yeah.
Can.
Which I guess you could argue that was in this case.
Dave Avid wants to know.
What does Dave Avid want to know?
What's the Hat's favorite song and why?
Do
you know that? I don't know.
It's Desperado, and the Hat doesn't like to talk about it.
Why?
The Hat doesn't like to talk about it. The Hat also doesn't like to talk about why it doesn't like to talk about it.
The Hat doesn't talk, so.
Also true. Yeah.
Maybe that's part of it.
No, I'm lying.
Desperado.
Technically, that was a Seinfeld joke, I suppose. But
favorite song?
Sorry, he likes Witchy Woman. Witchy Woman. I called the Hat he. That's inappropriate.
Yeah, that's very inappropriate.
I apologize to everyone except the Hat. I don't apologize to the Hat. The Hat knows what it did. It likes Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer.
Congo Square.
That's
a song that Matt likes a lot.
One of the... A thing that Trish used to say a lot, and I found out that it's a thing they say a lot in their family, is... You might actually know this. They just like to yell, "Look out, Ethel!" But it was too late.
The Streak.
Yep.
Yep.
And that's like such a fucking deep cut. They would just say it. I'm like, who the hell is Ethel? What? And then they explain it's from the
Excuse
street.
Me, sir. Did you see what happened? I did.
That's the thing. I know. And they called him the Streak.
Yeah.
That's literally the entire part. That's all I know of the song. Like, what I just sang, all I know of the song.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently that's the thing.
There's a reporter interviews the guy, and he's talking about what happened and how Ethel, you know, was embarrassed or Ethel covered her eyes or whatever. Don't look, Ethel.
The Hat's favorite song is Trapped by Colonel Abrams.
Colonel Abrams?
Yes.
Do I know that song?
I'm guessing you don't.
Is there? I know a version of. I know there's a song called "Trapped" that many artists have performed, including I think Bruce Springsteen, and the Springsteen version is the one I've heard.
I imagine this is not the same song.
Oh, okay. Trapped. This Springsteen song would work too.
Yeah, no, this is a very synthy poppy 80s song.
Oh, okay.
I think it was a deal in parts of Europe and or the British Isles. I don't think it was a thing over here. I learned about it accidentally. Somebody made reference to it on a British panel show, and most of the people on the show had no idea what they were talking about either, but two of them did, and they were all laughing about it. And I looked it up, and it was a real thing.
I think his favorite song is One Vision by Queen. That's what I
think. That's good. Gimme fried chicken.
Yeah.
Did I talk about this?
That's his favorite
before?
Bit.
So, like, I'm always underestimating how much of a Queen fan I am.
Yes, you did say that.
I remember that I said that. But so I've been trying to sort of test this recently, and getting a lot of Queens. No. I mean, I think this is like when I say that about, like, Bowie, too. Here's the Queen stuff I like.
Okay.
Every song that's been on the greatest hits
that
everybody knows and likes. I'm fond of You Are the Love of My Life purely because of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody, which may have been the first time I ever ran into that song, but I like it. Also, The Show Must Go On, although I think that might be on the greatest hits. And every song on the album... It's a Kind of Magic.
Oh, yeah, me too. I love every song on there.
And that's it, though. Like, that's it. And the thing is, Queen made, like, 14 albums, not counting compilations. Like, they have so many songs. So that's a very small number of songs. And it's arguably all the most popular ones. So I'm really a poser. I love those songs.
How did just about every single... Not just about. Every single song on It's a Kind of Magic is good to me.
It is.
I love them all. I love every single one of them.
I also spent a lot of my younger days thinking Highlander was a really good movie. A lot of my years thinking Highlander was a really good movie. I still kind of like it. And that, for the most part, with the exception of like two, maybe three songs, every song on there is... From Highlander.
Yeah, or should have been.
They were going to do... they were later going to go back and record an album that was the Highlander soundtrack,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah, right.
Or One Vision, which was from Iron Eagle.
Well, the Iron Eagle used it,
yeah,
but they clearly wrote it with...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With
I think the timing's all right.
Highlander in mind.
Yeah, but like, and then like two other songs. Like that album is essentially the Highlander soundtrack.
In fact... I think One Vision was probably written to be the end credit song, but it wasn't.
No, because we got Princes of the Universe. I think Princes of the Universe is probably
that. I thought that was the opening credit song.
Is it? Oh, you're right. It's a Kind of Magic, which actually I'm not nearly as fond of that song. Princes of the Universe. There's Don't Lose Your Head somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Which is a silly
Give me
song.
The prize. I love that.
Give me the prize.
That's a great
name. I know his name. And this is the thing. I love Clancy Brown. I love Clancy Brown for a lot of reasons. There are a lot of reasons to love Clancy Brown. That's the best one. Clancy Brown was such a great villain in that. And, oh my God, so how many Highlander movies have you seen?
I don't know.
Because
I might have seen all of them, but I mean,
I doubt it. Because they kept making them.
Only the first one I care about. The rest of them
were
terrible.
They made the first one.
Yeah.
They made the second one, which is objectively horrible.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone in the world agrees.
I'm quite sure I've seen that.
That movie is horrible.
I'm quite sure I've seen
it. Such that the director made a separate cut that completely changes the story. And it's still horrible, but less so because it takes out some of the most horrible bits of the story.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert for Highlander 2. In Highlander 2, it turns out they're fucking aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
Which makes no sense. And so the director's cut makes it so that's not true anymore.
Yeah.
But it's still a shitty movie. And then they made Highlander 3.
I think I've seen that
in
one.
In which all the immortals are gone, except it turns out Mario Van Peebles was stuck in a cave, and so somehow he just didn't count, and then he comes out. And what I fucking hate about that one, in that movie...
Is that a dumb idea?
Well, there's so many things dumb about that. But I appreciate homages. But they just straight up recreate the scene where Kurgan is driving the female lead from Highlander around and, like, gonna kill her and shit. And he's swerving with Mario Van Peebles and this little kid who's like McLeod's son or something. They recreate, like, the same fucking scene. And I'm just like, no! For so many reasons,
I'm pretty sure I've seen that, too. I don't remember much about it.
And then the fourth one was when they brought in the dude from the TV show.
And I know I saw that
one. And then they did a fifth one that was just the dude from the TV show.
Now, that's one I don't think I saw.
I don't think anybody saw that one. But I only got as far as three. But I saw 2 and 3 in theaters.
Mm.
And, in fact, when 2 became a thing was when I discovered 1. Because the trailers for 2, I was like, what the fuck is this? This is awesome. And what the fuck is The Quickening? That sounds really cool.
That's too bad you saw the second one before the first one.
Yeah, no.
That's really
sad. Well, I think
sad.
At the time I even kind of liked it. No, I mean, I saw it. I just saw the trailers. No, this is me. I couldn't watch the second one first.
I saw the trailers.
I'm like, what is... I've never heard of this. Oh, here it is. It's called Highlander. Let's watch it. This is awesome! And then I went and saw the other one. And then... We were still into the whole thing.
Why
so
has nobody
and...
made a rebooted version of Highlander? I mean, because there's a lot of things great about it, but it hasn't aged well. So you'd think someone would say, well, let's do this right, you know, with today's technology, and it could be a really awesome film.
It might be a dead horse thing. That show had 5 movies, 2 TV series.
Oh, 2? Really?
Yes. The
I never even saw
Amanda,
them.
What's her name? A female immortal who kept showing up and was like, is she good? She was the Catwoman of
okay.
the Highlander series.
Okay.
Eventually got her own spinoff.
Oh.
And a cartoon.
A cartoon?
It had a cartoon.
Wow. I didn't know that.
So they may be like, fuck it at this point. It's terrible. So, yeah, I don't know. But it could be interesting. We are out of time. So the important thing is, I'm Henry VIII, I Am by Herman's Hermits is the Hat's favorite song. So enjoy that. Go listen to Colonel Abrams. Trapped. I'm like a fool. I'm in a cage. Check it out, and then next week, come back.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's The Magical Talking Hat at gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com.